It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys of Kentucky through the Cumberland Gap.
Welcome to this edition of Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever protested the state sales tax by breaking into the governor's mansion. Welcome back, Jason. Is that true,
Thank you, by the way? I haven't broken into the governor's mansion. Yes, I can confirm.
That's good. That's good. So how were things during your absence?
They were great. I got a lot of... the yard mowed, and I got a lot of that trash taken out. It was great. I had just a little yard work. It was fine.
It's good that you had your priorities straight.
How did Mitch do?
Mitch was fantastic. He was a little nervous at first, but then he got right on board, and he did great.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Yeah, he didn't fully understand what was going to happen.
No. He said that as a cousin, you roped him into it.
You could say that, yes. And he owes me several hundred dollars, so...
Oh, he's working it off?
Yes, there's that
as
well.
By appearing for you on the show?
It's best left unsaid, but yes.
All right, yay capitalism.
Well, good, I'm glad so. He said that... I think he said it was fun. Actually, he said you're fun.
All right, well, we will take that then. Today's title is The Mob That Demanded Light Bulbs and Coffee. I am your host, Brent Taylor, Assistant Professor of History at West Kentucky Community and Technical College. And with me, back again, is the man who watches people freak out as they attempt to speak out. He is an Associate Professor of Communication at West Kentucky Community and Technical College, Jason Donner.
Very good. Yes, that's right.
Have they freaked out really badly before?
Maybe one I've had kind of just have to leave the room.
Just a complete meltdown?
Just a little bit, but that's very rare, yeah.
Okay, well, it's good that it's rare.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to torture the poor souls, right?
No.
All right. Well, in this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, we will hear the words of an English traveler in our Rock the Quote segment. And for the main event, we will talk about a Great Depression era break-in at the governor's mansion. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. In Rock the Quote today, Jason, we have Elias Fordham. He was a British traveler in the 18-teens. So back then, travelers used to go around and then they would write all the different kinds of things that they see wherever they go for people who had never been there It was kind of like Facebook. It was kind of like Instagram, which we have one like on Instagram now. Did you know that?
Oh, we do. We have a like.
We got one like on Instagram. It's going to be great.
Not a love?
Yeah. But this is the 18th century version of social media. You go and you just write up what you saw, and then people eventually read it. And he said about his visit to Kentucky, "In their persons, they are large and generally handsome, but are too much inclined to corpulency."
He said that.
Yeah, so we're good-looking but fat.
Yes. In the 18-teens?
18-teens, we were already trending towards our current state of affairs.
I would think that, that's kind of gets more difficult when you have a lack of food. We don't really, sugar is a special treat.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe his standard of corpulency was a little more strict, actually, than what it would be.
It was probably what we call just a few extra pounds.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah, you're not rail thin, so
still
that's corpulency.
Still a slam,
Yeah, that's a really backhanded compliment, isn't it? Man, you're good looking, but...
And what about generally handsome?
Generally handsome?
Yeah,
I guess that...
they're okay.
I can buy that because, there's the exception.
Yeah, he's okay. Is he good looking? He's okay.
Yeah, that's Elias Fordham for you, British traveler of the 18-teens. And I can't believe it. Time is flying now that you are back, Jason. It is already time to hear for the sponsor for this part of our program.
The fake.
And here it is.
A woman with a conscience buys slowly these days. But every woman wants a new spring hat. Bring your old straw hat up to the season's mold. With new hat dye, free from all stickiness. Any druggist or department store can show you the new hat 14-color card. Price only 25 cents.
We are really far removed from that era, Jason.
Right.
I mean, today, could you imagine the equivalent in 2017 of this is, oh, my St. Louis Cardinals hat's a little faded. I better run out and get some red tie-dye and see if I can spruce it back up.
Yeah, it's just we just don't think about that. We don't think about hats. We don't think about dyeing hats, certainly.
Well, just the throwing away of things. I mean, they're not going to throw that stuff away. They're going to fix it up with hat paint.
Right. And so you got, I guess, like a yellowish hat that becomes blue.
Yeah.
You got a new hat?
They're going to just put a new spin on something old.
Now, how can that really work, though? You're going to wear that on your head.
I don't know.
It's going to get on your head. It's going to get in your hair.
Oh, it'll rub off for sure, won't it?
Yeah, it's got to.
The first time you sweat, pretty soon your head's blue.
And that's all you're going to do is sweat.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a little danger in that new hat paint.
Right.
That's from 1922.
Yeah, that old lady sounded so pretty, though.
I bet back in the day, she could have had any man she wanted.
Yeah.
So now we're on to our main event. And this is the Depression era again, so 1930s. And there are so many problems in the 1930s. The first thing is the economy. Everybody knows unemployment is up at about 25%. It's even worse in some rural areas and things like that. But then the second problem is, we don't think about this, whenever we don't have money, the government doesn't have money. So one of the big problems we had in the Depression was the federal government, the state governments, all the governments are trying to figure out where we're going to get their money from. And they're increasing taxes, they're increasing income taxes, they're creating brand new taxes. This, in fact, in the state of Kentucky, was one of the forerunners of the modern state sales tax. And it was horribly unpopular. People didn't want it, especially businesses. They felt like that was going to raise their prices. They were going to lose customers out of it. And a whole lot of people descended upon Frankfurt to voice their displeasure with the idea that we're going to have all these taxes and this brand new tax especially.
So you're talking about
sales.
A state sales
state
tax.
Sales
didn't
tax,
exist
right.
before.
This is one of the very first ones in the entire nation.
Oh, okay.
And depending on how you kind of quantify it, it might even be the very first.
So it's like thousands of merchants and people
and it would
with
affect
business,
all those
just
businesses.
Everybody.
Yeah. Anybody who sells something, of course, then is going to be subject to this sales tax. Anybody who buys something is then affected by the sales tax. And that's a very in-your-face tax, too. That's one thing they saw in the American Revolution was when they had the Stamp Act, the problem was that stamp was just right there for everybody to see.
Right.
And it's right on your receipt now with the sales tax.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it just what cost $6 before costs more now.
Yeah.
Because and so you could actually every time you bought something you felt that sales tax.
Yeah, yeah, and it was 1%. So it's
1%
come up
1% sales.
Sounds pretty good today, but back then they said, "No, we don't want this." And the next thing you know, we're looking in the newspaper and we see these reports about the protests that have sort of spun out of control down at the state capitol. If we look here, it says Governor LaFoon. That is Governor Ruby LaFoon.
LaFoon, huh?
What a name, right? Ruby LaFoon.
There had to be buffoon stories about LaFoon.
You know that that's just a joke in the making.
Right.
Especially if you don't happen to like the policies of that particular politician. Governor LaFoon said today he did not intend to take punitive action against persons who late yesterday forced their way into the executive mansion, frightened the household, and slightly damaged the mansion's furnishings. The chief executive said he preferred to let the incident drop. Which, that's kind of interesting, that he kind of understands the protest or doesn't want to further inflame it by trying to prosecute
these
people.
Sometimes decisions are made like that, though, especially when it's a mob, I guess, if you want to put it that way. You know, like the general consensus.
Yeah, and there's
I don't
a tendency
know what,
maybe to let things go.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And let everything cool off.
Yeah, 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 that's true. At the same time, leaders of merchants' delegations issued a statement expressing regret over the affair and assurance it was not part of their program of protest. This was not an official protest, they're saying, against Governor LaFoon's 1-cent sales tax program. The group estimated to number 100 entered the governor's mansion after a demonstration of thousands of Kentucky merchants and their friends at the Capitol against the tax.
So they're bursting into the mansion. They're around the mansion, but some of them broke in.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what. And it's more like, instead of breaking in, it's more like bullying their way in.
Right.
And we'll see that as the tale unfolds.
Okay.
A detail of city police kept guard at the mansion until late last night when the majority of the thousands of visitors departed for their homes. On the advice of his friends and family, the governor did not leave the mansion last night, although he said he had no fear he would be molested. Douglas Majors, the Negro doorman, so that's early 20th century lingo.
Type of language, yeah.
Okay. At the executive mansion, gave a detailed account of the disturbance to the governor and a newspaper man. He said that the crowd broke into the mansion, came to the front door, and asked to see the women folks. Now, that's the scary part of this story, I think.
What are they referring to?
I guess they realize the governor's not there, so they want to see the first lady. I guess that's what it means.
Yeah.
He's also got some children. But yeah, that's a pretty creepy sort of thing for the mob to do.
Right.
And to demand. When Majors refused to let the visitors inside, one of the men offered him $40, pretty good money in the Depression, if he would tell them where the governor was. But he refused to do so. He said the crowd was composed of men and women, and many of them wore badges, such as were worn to identify members of the protesting delegation. After being threatened with violence, Majors said, he was shoved aside and the intruders entered the mansion. Employees of the household ran into the basement, and one of them notified the governor, who was in his office in the state house nearby. Neither Mrs. LaFoon nor the governor's two daughters, Mrs. Layla LaFoon and Mrs. William Robinson, were home at the time, but the governor's two grandchildren, Tommy Robinson, 2 1/2, R.W. Robinson, 11, were there but were not molested. So it's good that they really weren't there with any kind of bad intent. It's also kind of good that maybe the governor and the other parts of the family weren't there. Because remember, they came in asking for the women folk.
Right.
And I guess they didn't realize that they weren't at home either.
Well, let's say, too, in the language of the day, you're using that word molested.
Right. That
which
means
might hit
that
people's
they
ears the wrong way. But
they weren't accosted.
Yeah, they weren't
bothered.
Nothing
or messed
happened
with. To them. Right.
Right.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Is
different
the
kind of connotation from the modern version of that word. Good
yeah.
point. Major said the intruders made themselves at home, claiming this is not the governor's house. It belongs to us because we paid taxes on it.
That we hear that sentiment quite a bit, don't we?
Oh, yeah. I paid
Same
for
thing.
That.
Same mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah,
you worked
absolutely.
For me. I paid my taxes.
Yes. He said they demanded coffee, but were told there was none prepared. Can you imagine that? You break into the governor's mansion.
Yeah.
The first thing you do is, where's the coffee?
Got any coffee here?
Yeah.
We paid for that coffee.
We paid for that coffee. You should brew us some right this minute. Exactly.
Where are the police in this? Nobody is there but the doorman?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's
there's not a guard around the house.
Apparently the security's a little lax in the 1930s.
And there was a protest going on, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe they
were
there
and
they just...
I guess we're just counting on the tradition of, you know, people are pretty orderly.
Right.
And generally things are. I mean, you know, most protests don't turn violent. They don't result in busting into the mansions. And I mean,
sure.
And I guess back then they just really expected that it wouldn't do it.
I think, too, a kind of interesting point is that it might seem like this is a phenomenon now, but people have always reacted this way, especially to what they feel is like government overreach. And
oh,
they have
right.
a protest that may start out nicely, and then it just gets a little bit out of hand with some of them.
Yeah, that's true. And there is a tendency to think, oh, well, 2017 is the worst it's ever been.
Right.
We've never seen protests like this. You really don't have to go back too far to see things that resemble what
mm-hmm.
are happening. That's true. Governor LaFoon said his visitors carelessly disposed of cigarette butts, burning holes in the carpets and searing furniture. Have you ever seen that, by the way, what a cigarette will do to a couch or a
oh,
chair?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's just... awful little black hole. They just
yeah.
kind of trash the place.
And you can't. Yeah, that's. I mean, it's like a big party, right? And you've seen a house after a party. That's what this is going to remind you of. He said they removed several electric light bulbs from the lighting fixtures in the house. So once again, okay. I paid for that light bulb.
Well, it was something you could take. Yeah.
Absolutely. That's my money. Public money paid for that light bulb. I'm taking it home with me. One of the employees in the mansion said it was one of the intruders had a pistol, but did not threaten anyone with it. So that's a little ominous there, too. But apparently they weren't there for those kinds of reasons, or they would have done something.
They ate the sandwiches that they brought with them.
It's like they played the piano. Picnic, right?
Yeah, it's all. Yeah, they broke in, but they're not just totally out of control.
Yeah. The governor termed the incident a disgrace and an outrage. That's a pretty good soundbite for the 1930s, I'd say. And then I like, there's kind of a part B to this, because you've got all these people kind of milling about in the city, and they're in kind of a surly mood because of the tax protests and things. Aside from the occurrence at the mansion and a slight disturbance in the state library in the Capitol, the demonstration was reported by officials as orderly, as could be expected in view of the congestion. A group of protesters became boisterous in the state library and was asked to leave by Mrs. James Campbell Cantrill, the librarian.
Okay.
So we tacked that on there as a little bonus in the story.
Here we come. Would you just not come in here now?
They got shushed by the librarian.
Yes. So
and that took care of the protest.
And I guess they just spun around and left.
So I'm thinking the next time we see a big mass protest out there, we got to just deploy the librarians and they'll fix it.
Or just say, just ask nicely, could you just not do this right now?
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Our sponsor for this half of the program, though, Jason, is the two-oven GE range with push buttons. Never before at this low price, $299.95, and a trade-in of your old range.
It's got two distinct ovens side by side. This thing is massive.
Oh, it is a – this is a nice appliance. There's no question about that. But, yeah, it's a double oven. And apparently what they show here in the picture is you can cook the turkey in one compartment.
Yeah, it's got a turkey.
And then you're going to turn around and bake the pies in the other one. And you don't have to spend 4 hours baking the turkey or whatever it takes and then turn around with another hour for each pie. You can bake it all at the same time. Yeah. You're going to be multitasking.
I guess in that case, like if you're thinking about Thanksgiving, this is the one time when having this massive stove would be useful.
Yeah.
But do
you
really need two ovens? I guess no waiting
with
on that.
The turkey. I mean, you know how the turkey goes on and on and on, right?
Yeah,
but you also want to make the pie.
Will take some time.
And maybe you don't want to bake the pies 2 days in advance. You want them to be fresh for the guests. It makes a whole lot of sense for something like Thanksgiving. But then again, if you've got a double oven, you kind of think, well, maybe we can use this for Sunday dinner, too, because this is 1952, and you're going to have maybe the larger family gatherings, and household size was a little bit larger back then. It was about 3.54 people per household. I looked that up.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't know if I could find that stat, but I found it. And,
it's kind of neat, too, like, because it has so much real estate there on top now. It still just has four burners. But then you got the knobs over on the other side. So now you're not reaching across your boiling pots.
That would be nice. I never thought about that.
Yeah, you have to reach over and get it. Now, a lot of them have them on the front now, too. But then you got little kids touching them. Yeah, and then you got a little place there. It's just really big. You're going to need a lot of room for this.
Yeah, this is kind of a two-cabinet removal if you're going to try to install this. It's not going to fit in the normal space.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's...
It's starting to feel like we're selling these things, the way we're talking about it.
Well, we are,
we're really
right?
taken with it, yeah.
If we don't sell them, then the fake money will not roll in. And so you need to roll on down to Settles Sales and Service, Jeffersontown. Phone number 5638.
Yeah, they want you to... It's $299.95 is what it is, and they... And your old range.
Yeah, so you're trade
trading
that in.
It in.
And you can also, though, put this on a payment plan. No money down, easy terms. Because that's the 1950s. Times are good again. You might as well indulge a little bit.
That's kind of common, too, wasn't it, back then? They kept coming up with ideas for the kitchen, kept making the kitchen easier.
Yeah, that started in the 20s. That's when kind of the kitchen got this big makeover,
okay,
as we know it today. Refrigerators, toasters. And then we're kind of in the 1950s perfecting that some.
Right.
Yeah, and that's also the decade where...
Like the wave of the future kind of thing.
Yeah, well,
that's the way it was pitched to people.
And maybe even a return to the past, too, because this is sort of like the last stand for the homemakers and the stay-at-home wives. And so all these appliances are,
right,
are big things in the 1950s. Yeah, you're 100% right about all that. And now you need to be 100% right about your takeaway.
Mm.
What struck you the most? What struck you the most?
Let me think here. I think that story too about the mob and the way that they tell the story. Yeah, they force their way in, but I don't know if it plays out that way or just the way that they told stories in those days. But it's so quaint. You know, it's just the kind of the quaint, polite way.
That was a really polite mob.
In.
I agree
yes.
with that entirely.
And
I mean, if a mob were to invade my house, I want it to be that mob,
right,
and no
right.
other mob.
And the little things that disturb them. I mean, and we said before, you know, it hasn't changed that much. But yeah, I think maybe they were more polite. You know, they were more respectful, and they broke in. But
that was a respectful mob.
If the
no
librarian can just shush them away, then.
They're not that threatening,
yeah,
are they?
Yeah, they made their point, but not that threatening.
Interesting. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter, but never fear, and you aren't scared, are you?
I'm scared of that question.
You're scared of that question?
Yes.
Because what, are you afraid you'll be afraid someday?
Like, what? Are we done? Is this number 10?
This is the season finale.
Season finale.
And we will be totally done as soon as I can finish this sentence.
Finish that sentence. All right. Don't forget about Todd.
Never. More quirky old Kentucky tales are yet to be told. Special thanks to our sound engineer and producer, Todd Birdsong, the Paducah School of Art and Design, WKMS, and the rest is history.